Hello, welcome to the photo show.
Yes.
I never thought I'd say that again. It's been a while. It's been 2 years, I think, maybe, since we last did a photo show, and I think we only did about two or three, and then it's been 2 years since before that, and it's probably going to be another two before we do another one after this one. Who knows? What I'm going to try and do is get the doc done and get everything sorted so that when we do a Mac show and that kind of stuff, I can slot it in between the other two shows. If I can get that done, then I'll definitely be doing them. I'm going to say that I'm going to do a monthly. If I do knock one out sooner than that, then great. But they're monthly shows. So that's the only commitment I'm making. I'm going to do one a month and that's it. The problem I had last time was that the news wasn't as frequent. So trying to find stories every week was tough. But if I can find two or three, then I might do a shorter show. Who knows? Or what I might do is see if I can get some local photographers or other photographers in to talk about what they do and how they do it and learn some stuff. So we'll try and get Ian on, who's a great landscape photographer. Neil Gove, maybe. A guy called Stuart James, who I know here in Birmingham as well. We'll get them on and see what they do, how they do it, what their setup is and that kind of stuff if we haven't got any news. So I'll try and do it as much as possible, but I'm only committing to one a month from now on. Right. A couple of people in the chat room, which is nice. So I have a bit of interaction. Let's kick it straight off then with the news. The news then. We're going to stick to the same format we had last time. So we're going to have five news stories, five gear stories, and then we'll have three or four questions that come in. We've got a couple of extra questions this time though, because we haven't done them for a while and they've built up. So we'll try and do a few more. We're going to hit the 45-minute mark maybe at the most, so stick with it. First story then. A new study of has said that photographers are constantly asked for free work because people know that they love their job. Yes, apparently I love my job, and that's what allows me to do it. The study was done by two professors at Duke University Business Department, and they wrote a paper that was called Understanding Contemporary Forms of Exploitation. And they've come up with this phenomenon that they've called passion exploitation. In other words, if you are clearly passionate about your subject or passionate about your job and you're in an artistic field, then people are more likely to try and exploit you. The study covered 2,400 participants and it found that those people who were in an artistic job were more likely to have acceptance of the fact that they were being exploited by members of the public. So people who were like a clerk or something like that, they weren't happy. But also, not just the people who were receiving the exploitation were more happy, the people who were doing the exploiting, so people like bosses and members of the public, saw exploitation of artistic people far more as acceptable than people who were in administrative jobs or in non-artistic jobs. There we go. I think that's quite interesting. That's really interesting because there is an awful lot of it that goes on. And if you look at the modern photography market, I'm a chiseled old, I've been doing this for 35 years plus, so I'm a bit of an old curmudgeon, or you know, very hardened to it. Perhaps I'd give away nothing. If you want to buy something from me, if you want an image, then I'm going to buy it for you. That's not true, because I do favors for friends and stuff like that. And good customers, I'll do the odd bit of stuff where it's like, yeah, don't worry about it, it's fine. But generally speaking, you know, if you want me, you pay for me, and that's the end of it. And a woman the other week said, "Can you do anything on the price?" I said, "Yeah, I can double it. Not a problem." So this does go on though. And the thing you've got to remember is that if you are doing this, and this is a word to all you newbie photographers who've come since the digital age, you give away far too much. One of the things that you've really got to think about is whether you should be keeping hold of your copyright. And we've got a story a bit later on actually about that in a second. But be careful, because if you start giving stuff away, people get used to it. The research has found that the tendency to exploit passion arises from two beliefs. Firstly, that the work is its own reward, and secondly, that the person would have volunteered it anyway. That ain't good. That ain't good at all. Now, how are you with nudity? I don't mind it, I have to say. Apparently Facebook, though, does. So Facebook has decided to ban artistic nudity. So anything that shows... Now, the thing is as well that they haven't done this with like statues. So if you see David's meat and two veg, they will let you put that picture up quite happily. If you see the nude Venus de Milo, they'll let you put that picture up happily. And also some of the paintings that are on there, they'll let you put those up. That's not an issue. But photography was designed to be not artistic nudity for the purposes of art in that sense. So it was banned. The National Coalition Against Censorship got really pissed off, and they said, in recent months, Facebook, I'm quoting here, by the way, Facebook has faced scrutiny for its community guidelines and censorship practices. The site's policies, which make an exception for nudity in paintings and sculptures, excludes photography. Photographers reported having their accounts and photos deleted without warning or explanation. So there's a guy called Spencer Tunick, good lad. He started a movement which is called hashtag We the Nipple. I don't know where the nipple comes into it, but We the Nipple. He decided to protest about this, and there was a whole pile of nude models that turned up and stripped off outside Facebook's headquarters. And they covered their private parts with pictures of men's nipples. So I'm guessing that men's nipples were outlawed as well as ladies' nipples, which are definitely outlawed in it. Facebook has responded, and I'm quoting here as well, "We restrict the display of nudity or sexual activity because some of the people in our community may be sensitive to this type of content." I've got to say, I've got some kind of sympathy with them there, because I know there's an age limit on when you're supposed to be on Facebook and that kind of stuff, but you know, kids have got Facebook accounts, and do I want my daughter seeing overt nudity? No. Am I bothered about her seeing artistic nudity? That's interesting, because I'm not sure how I feel about that. I think it's probably okay, but then where do you draw the line of artistic nudity? And I suppose photographs are an awful lot more verging on the pornographic than statues would be. So I kind of get what they're thinking there. Our nudity policies have become more nuanced over time. While we restrict some images of female breasts that include the nipple, we allow other images, including those depicting acts of protest, women actively engaged in breastfeeding, and photos of post-mastectomy scarring. We also allow photographs of painting, sculptures, and other art that depicts nudity as well. Tough one. But they've done it, and there is a, I think they're going to get them to repeal it. So that would be really cool if they did. But we'll have to wait and see where it ends up, because it's not brilliant. Next story then. Elon Musk is in a bit of grief. The reason he's in a bit of grief is he's put up a whole pile of satellites. Now, this story's kind of shocking to me, actually, because I thought it was a couple of things and that was it, and it just about do it and so on. But there's like a line of satellites that is going across the sky called the Starlink project that is from Elon. I don't know exactly what they're doing. They're providing an internet thing, apparently, that will improve internet coverage. But there's a line of them going across the sky. Now, because of the angle that they're at, it means that they're reflecting an awful lot of light back to Earth. Now, I thought this was, because there's a line of what looks like about a dozen satellites, maybe 15, something like that, on a video that's posted by a guy called Bill Keller. Bill Kell, sorry, who's a university professor at University of Alabama. But this is the first of a series of satellites that are going to go up between now and mid-2020. The mid-2020, so 2025 onwards, that Elon Musk is putting up. There's going to be 12,000 satellites up there. Yes, you heard me, 12,000 satellites doing this across the sky. And the problem is, as they rotate, they tilt down and they give light back to the Earth. There's a set of satellites called Iridium satellites that spin. They're triangular. And if you put a long, you know, time-lapse camera up, or you put a long exposure camera up, rather, if you see a long streak that really gets wider and then gets narrow again, that's probably an Iridium satellite spinning as it goes across the sky. Well, the trouble is with these things, the brightness that comes off them is 1.5 times that of Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky that you can see at night. So they actually cause an awful lot of light pollution for people that are doing astrophotography. And if you've set your camera up on your telescope and it's tracking the azimuth of the rotation of the universe and got like a, you know, a 4 or 5 hour exposure, then that's going to be pretty significant, and it's going to really screw up your photo and piss you off. So everyone's complained. There's been an uproar over the last couple of months because of astrophotographers again getting upset about this. And someone wrote to Elon Musk, and Elon has said, well, yeah, okay, what's the big deal? There's like thousands of these already up there, and no one's saying, you know, there's a zero percentage here, so bugger off. But apparently he did listen, because he went back to his engineers, and the engineers have now changed the angle of the satellites so that they reflect back to Earth far less than they did beforehand. But if you're an astrophotographer, there is a video on the story that I've got on F-Stoppers. you go in and type astrophotography, you'll see this line of satellites going off on this guy's video camera. And it's not insignificant. It's not insignificant. A landmark case has come through. It's a copyright case from a guy. It's a copyright case that's come through from a photograph that someone took. Justin Goldman took a picture of Tom Brady, the American footballer, and Danny Ainge, at a Celtics game, Boston Celtics, which I think is basketball, isn't it, in 2016, and put it up on his Snapchat. Now, several media outlets saw the image and gathered it and used it on their own feeds because it was repeated out on Twitter. But they didn't take the photo and put it on their own servers. All they did was embed the link to the Twitter story, which I'm guessing Justin didn't control. Now, Goldman's really pissed off about this, and he sued the sites that put it up. There was three sites that he was going for. And their defense was, no, you can't sue us. And the reason you can't sue us is because the item is not on our servers. It's a hosted image, which we're then embedding the link to it. So we haven't stolen the photo. We've stolen the link. You've got to go back to the people who stole the photo. And the judge has ruled against them. The judge has said that if you embed a link to somewhere where there is an illegally hosted photo where the copyright has been breached, then you are as guilty as the people that have posted it, which is quite quite interesting. And one of the things that they've asked relief for appeal, and the judge has said, yes, okay, you can appeal if you like. If that goes through, the appeal has been granted, but the people that are defending it are saying this is a cause to a tremendously chilling effect on the core functionality of the web. In other words, it's become the norm to steal people's copyright. And that's not good. That is not good. Look after your copyright, people, because you never know. Good plan, Bob. Absolutely correct, says Bob. I don't know what they're talking about in there. But there you go. That's the story. There is a copyright case now, and if you embed an image, you could be getting sued. So watch out for yourselves. A photographer has been hit by the opening ceremonial pitch at a White Sox game. Now, I'm going to have a little play here and see if I can... Oh, let's go. And I'll edit, don't worry. Here we go. This is the pitch from the young lady who's done it. She's an unnamed employee of the Boston, of the White Sox, and she has come to throw the pitch, and here it comes. Bang. It's hit the photographer. The photographer is unhurt and the camera is undamaged, you'll be pleased to hear. But she's not been named. And they've all said that actually it was the flash going off which caused the problem. Of course, it can't be the fact that she can't throw. No, that would never do. Would it? Oh, hang on. Let me get back to... there we go. Oh, hang on. I can edit, don't worry. I can edit. That would never do. But that's the news. Let's go on to the gear. Right. The gear is quite exciting, actually, because there's a whole pile of new lenses that have come out from Sony. Let's get started on those straight away. There we go. The first one is this one. It is the 600mm. So it's a single lens. 600mm f4 G-series lens. Now, I've got two of the G-series lenses for my Sony, and I do love them. They are beautifully made. The grinding on them is supposed to be incredibly high definition, and they do make a difference. They are gorgeous. I cannot fault the G-series lenses. This one at 600mm and f4, as you can guess, is probably going to be pretty significant. Now, it's been made for the A9 and A7 ranges of mirrorless cameras, so you're not getting it on E-mount or anything like that. Forget it. It's 3 kilos in weight, which is not bad. It's got extreme aspherical elements and 3 high-end fluorite elements as well. And this and the next two lenses that I'm going to show you have got extra low dispersion elements for chromatic aberration. It's a gorgeous lens. It looks stunning. It's designed to partner the f2.8 400mm lens, which was released last September. Now, that f2.8 lens at 400mm was released at $10,000. So you can guess this isn't going to be cheap at 600mm. Being as F4, fair enough. You might think, well, we could go a bit bigger. We could get a 2.8. No, you can't. It would be enormously huge and heavy then. This thing is going to be £12,000 or $13,000 if you'd like to buy it. If you're a high-end photographer and you've got loads of sports stuff, it will be gorgeous. It will be super gorgeous. It will be stunning. But I ain't got 10 grand to put on a lens, so I'm afraid I won't be doing it. The other lens is another picture of it. It does. I really am. Yeah, you could get wood over this quite happily, couldn't you? It is lovely. There's those extra low dispersion lenses, which cut down your chromatic aberration at the back end. And XD linear motors. So I'm hoping this thing probably focuses pretty quickly. But this the one? Yes, here we go. This one is different. This is the 200 to 600 zoom lens. It's f5 to f6.3 though, so it's a lot more closed. It's a good looking lens. Again, it's G series, so it'll be good quality. Has got 24 elements in 7 groups. It's only 2.1 kilograms and it's specifically designed for mirrorless bodies. And you're going, oh, blimey, Ewan, you've just told us that the other one's going to be 10 grand. What's this one going to be? This one's 1995, so just under £2,000 if you want to buy it. It looks a very good lens. F5 to 6.3, that's what really makes it worse for me, in the sense that if you go to Canon, you can get 70-200 and you can get some of the stuff that goes up to 500 millimeters, and it's not this kind of price. So it's expensive, but it's not hugely expensive. It is there or thereabouts on the price. The thing that's nice about both of these lenses is that they have got the low chromatic aberration filter on them, or lenses on them. But also, they're both compatible with drive on the Sony 1.4 and 2 times converters. So if you connect those converters, you will get power through to the lens, so it will drive on the motors and that kind of stuff. You won't have it, and you'll have autofocus and that kind of thing, which is kind of cool. So well worth doing. Now then, I spoke to Andy, who's a developer friend of mine. We've got a camera project we've been doing together, and I showed him the next thing, and he was beside himself. This is going to be loads and loads of fun. This is the DJI Robot Master. Now, what does the Robot Master do? Well, this comes in a kit pack and you have to build it for a start. So if you and your budding developer child want to get on with it, it's great. It's a Lego project on steroids. Once you've built it though, this thing has an opportunity to teach programming language to the person that's built it. The simple programs that come with it. There's an operating system that runs on it. It'll teach you programming concept, and it supports Scratch 3.0 and Python as well. So you've got different languages you can program it in. There's extra things that you can buy to expand to this, to put onto it, to get it to do other functionality. Now, those type of wheels that are on this, I've seen those before on a forklift truck. And the reason they're like that is, on a smooth surface, it means you can crab sideways instead of having to go forwards and backwards to get turns. So there's no steering on this, I'm guessing, because those things will deal with the translation. 520 degrees pitch and warp, four-wheel drive, omnidirectional movement, 6 audio-visual recognition features, and it's got an IR bead blaster with sound effects. And one of the other things that's kind of cool about this thing is it's got sensors on it that knows when it's been hit. So you can have two of these and have a battle with each other, which does look really cool. So not only is it a toy you can build and you've got the Lego end of it, it'll teach you programming, and it's something you can do with your kid if you want to make him into a nice programmer. There you go. Price then. You're sitting thinking this is going to be big bucks. $500. B&H Video have got them for sale. If you want to go to bnhvideo.com and bhphotovideo.com and you can buy one. $500. I think that's a really cracking buy. That's got to be one of the gears of the week for me for this week. Really, really good. Bob Beach is exclaiming that £10,000 for a lens. Yes, it's expensive, mate. Next thing then. Now, do you know Atomos? Have you heard of Atomos? So what Atomos do, I've got an Atomos. They make little mini recorders, and they usually top out about 7 or 8 inches, and they can take SSDs in them, because they've got eSATA on them, and you can put SD cards in them, and they're really quick. They're brilliant, brilliant devices. The definition on the screens is luscious, and the one that I've got does up to 4K, and it's beautiful. I wouldn't be without it. I use it on a regular basis. But there's a new range coming out. This is the Neon. Now, the Neon comes in four basic sizes, and you can see them here. And you're looking at that thinking, okay, they're just small. They're not. The smallest one that you can see there is a 17-inch monitor recorder. Then the next one up is 24-inch. Then the one next to that is 31-inch. And the big one that you can see at the back is 55 inches. They all do 4K. The smallest one does 2.1K, but the rest all do 4K, and the biggest one does 4K HDR. Now, that's lovely, and you're going, well, God, that'd be fantastic. But you're not going to lunk it around. This is going to be in for studios. At 55 inches, it's not going on tour with you. And the thing that's really kind of cool with these is they do recording, but the screen resolution is set. So the largest one is standard Ultra 4K. So it's the 38 whatever by 2160. It's beautiful and it's luscious, but it's never going to get better than that. But this is the cool thing. Atomos have put other components on the inside, which you can buy upgrades for. So at the moment, you can't buy them, but they've left it open that when they improve the tech and they come out with another module that goes inside, you can buy just the module and put it in. And what that's going to give you then is 8K full ProRes RAW HDR recording on these devices, which is kind of cool. So technologically wise, this is brilliant. You're getting 8K ProRes HDR recording, providing your camera obviously will capture that. You're not going to see anything different on the screen because they're going to be restricted at 4K, but you'll get the recording capacity at the back end of it. How much is it going to cost you? That's where it's going to get off the rails a little bit, because the little tiny one here, the 17-inch, starts at $3,999. That's on B&H Video at the moment. The others aren't released yet, and there's no formal price on them as well, but I can probably think that you're going to be into the tens of Ks for the 55-inch model, unfortunately. Bad luck. And, there we go. There's another picture of it. 10-bit, 12-bit recording at 8K. And finally, the last story on the gear is Profoto's new strobe heads. Now, Profoto makes some lovely stuff. They always have. They've always been quite pricey, it has to be said, but they've always been very good quality. And they do an awful lot with the mobile stuff, so you've got mobile battery systems that will link into them and that you can then take them out on shoots on location. So they've released a few over the last couple of years. They've released the B10 a little while ago and the B10 Air, and these are the B10 Plus. So they're a step up from the B10 allegedly. And you're going, okay, so what's the difference? Well, you get half as many flashes out of these on a single battery charge, but you will get double the output in light. So they are very powerful heads. They also get a slightly quicker cycle time. So the B10 will cycle at 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds. These will cycle at 2 seconds. The good news is if you've got Profoto batteries, they're a concurrent link with the existing connectors, so you're not going to have to buy new batteries or anything like that. You can still use these. The bad news is that one of these babies is going to cost you £1,700. So we've gone a bit Top Gear here, really, haven't we, today? We've got all the stuff that you can't afford or you don't want to afford. Profoto stuff is good. I know that it's really good, but I've got to say, in terms of mobility strobe heads, it's not something I've ever spent that kind of money on. But I'm sure they're lovely if you want to. Anyway, it's time for the questions. Right then. First question, which was sent in an awful long time ago. Sheila, if you're still listening, I do apologise if I didn't cover it, but here we go. Sheila from Hornchurch has put in, when I use my on-camera flash, the results look really harsh. Is there a way I can make it appear softer? And how do the professionals do flash so that the people don't look washed out by the flash? Well, if you're talking about professionals who are doing it at an event and that kind of stuff, what they've probably got is a flash head that sits on top of the camera that then angles. So the top, instead of being pointing right at the person, it will be pointing up to the ceiling, and they're looking for a bit of diffusion as it comes off the ceiling, or a bit of a general glow if it comes off it. They also then have a diffuser cap, which they'll put on the top, or they'll have something that goes upright and then a piece of paper that angles it forwards into the person so it diffuses it naturally from that position. But failing, you're probably talking a couple hundred quid to get a really decent one. I know if you're up into the Canon end, you're talking 600 plus for a decent flash head to go on your Colt mount. If you're saying that you've got a built-in flash on your camera, then it may not have a cold shoe on the top, or a hot shoe on the top, rather. So that might not work for you anyway. One of the things you can do is get yourself some of that magic Scotch tape. You know the stuff that's semi-translucent? Get about four layers of that on the front of your flash, and that'll give you a nice diffusion. The thing is as well, if your camera's, even if your camera's fairly simplistic and it's not too old, the chances are it shoots raw anyway. So if you underexpose deliberately, you've got a bit more that you can work with. So put an extra couple of layers of tape on until you get that where it's just below what you need. And then you can always boost it in post anyway afterwards. But if it's a built-in camera, you're probably going to have to get either a special thing that goes over the top, which does the job of being a diffuser, or use some of that magic tape. That'll solve your problems. Next question is from Mike Grady in Somerset. Again, it's an old one. I do apologize. What focal length does image stabilization cease to be of any benefit? Well, that's a hard question, mate. And the reason it's a hard question is because image stabilization is meant to kind of work in sync with your wobble in your arm. The worst thing you can do is take a camera that's got image stabilization and stick it on a tripod, because the image stabilization still tends to rock around because it's automatically assuming that the camera's going to be moving. Once you get to handheld, I don't know, 300mm, 400mm, you start to get a bit wobbly. At 600mm, you're really struggling. If you go back to the lenses that we were talking about earlier at 600mm, then they're going to be really heavy. 3 kilograms of lens out at near arm's length. You're never going to hold that up in your hand. You're going to have to put it on a monopod at least, or a tripod. So I would suggest that handheld with a bought lens that you can stick on, probably 400mm. There we go. That's my guess, but it's pointless, really. It's not really. It's a good question, but what I'm saying is there isn't really an answer, if you know what I mean. Christian's written in. When I upload images to the website, my website, they have a weird pattern across them when they're small. Also, when I'm in Finder, the image preview has the same patterns, but when I open the image, it's fine. What's going wrong? Nothing's going wrong, mate. The effect that you saw there that's got weird lines on it, that's an effect called moiré, and it happens when you double scan something. So if you take in print, you used to make your take your images and you put a dot screen over the top and you take a picture of them. If you then did that again with an image that had already been screened, you'd get loads of these wavy lines that would come across it. That's moiré. Moiré comes from something to do with textiles, in the way that you make textiles, and it's something to do with wetness. I don't know what it is though, but it's something to do with textiles. But you also get, if you get like a gabardine suit or a Prince of Wales check or something like that, then you'll get, if you take a picture of someone that's wearing that, you'll get moiré. What's causing the moiré on your website is the compression algorithm of whatever it is that you're using to put the image up. So if you put, if you want to list something on eBay or something like that, then the chances are, if you've got a compressed image, a fairly compressed image to start with, and you upload that, it'll compress it even more. And the conflict in compression algorithm will put the lines across it. When people open it and look at it, it'll look fine. But when it's in the miniature version, it'll look really crap. What can you do to stop it? If you're doing in-camera sharpening will cause the problem. So take your sharpening off, because over-sharpened images will do it. Now, you're saying that, but actually one of the tricks that you should have is, if you're sharpening an image, you should over-sharpen it slightly for the web, because it's going to be smaller, so you'll want the edge definition to come through, but it will do the moiré effect in the compression, so just be careful. There's a balance to strike, but no sharpening prior to upload if you're going to use it on a site that's doing the compression for you. If you're putting it on your own website, then the chances are that you can control the compression, so it doesn't matter. But if you put it on eBay or something like that, then it's going to do the compression, and its compression algorithm is really harsh. Don't sharpen your image. Question from Graham in our Slack room. Will there ever be a time where a pro can be on site with one camera and one fixed lens and do everything? Well, okay, so if you've got a fixed lens, you tend to find that the lenses that you've got are controlled by the size of the end aperture relative to, or the end of the lens, the glass on the end dictates the size of the aperture you can have in the lens. So if you want a 2.8 f-stop, then you're going to have to go bigger on the glass on the end to accommodate that. And once you get bigger on the end, you're going to have trouble with zoom and that kind of thing. And a bridge camera will then have a huge piece of glass on the end, which will make it unwieldy, which means you're going to struggle. So at extreme zoom. At the professional end of the market, but you're already at the stage where you can do zoom with bridge cameras up to 1,200 times and that kind of stuff. So, or 1,200 millimeters rather. So you can do it, but you want to post those. Chances are no. Would a pro do that? Would it be in my lifetime? Probably. But at the moment, I certainly don't see it. And it's probably a good 5 or 10 years away. And it's because of the optics and the glass size. Until they can start making lenses lighter by using a high-grade Perspex or something like that, then I don't see it happening. But I can't see that happening either. But in terms of, like, do I use lots of lenses? I tend to shoot with one lens on my video camera an awful lot. And I use the 24-70 an awful lot on the stills camera. I don't go away from that very much unless I've got to sit back from an operation and I really want to zoom in. And I have to say, don't tell me customers, but I've published a few images for them that I've taken on my iPhone, and they're not bad. And I did a video a little while ago, and I shot the opening sequence because I packed everything up I was going. And I just thought, oh, the sun's come out. I'll just get a couple of shots. And I pulled my iPhone out, and the iPhone does a great job. So it's not the end of the world. And the last question comes from Dodsy in our Slack room as well. Here we go. I'd love an opinion on what to use for sports photography. Ionic says shutter aperture, but I've seen posts that say aperture priority to help. I think you mean shutter priority. But I've seen posts that say aperture priority to help isolate the players in shot in a good light with ISO not too high, less than 1,000. It works, but is it good practice? That's going to depend on the speed of your sport, for a start. So if you're talking about capturing a cricket match, then you'd probably get away with an awful lot less in terms of the speed, so you wouldn't have to worry too much. If it's bright sunlight, like a cricket match might be, then you're naturally going to be an awful lot faster, which means you can dip your ISO and you can keep your aperture fairly well closed if you want to and still get good speed. But I would say I would always shoot sport on aperture priority, and I'd probably throw my lens open to 2.8 a lot of the time, because that keeps my quality up, because I can keep my ISO down. And it also means at 2.8, I'm knocking out the background, so I'm isolating the player from whatever it is that they're doing. If you're at a golf tournament, you don't want the crowd in sharp quality. You just want the player, so that knocks them out. If you're at a cricket match, you want the crowd in the background out. If you're at a football match, you want that footballer that's dealing with the football, or a rugby player that's dealing with the ball in, and you want other players to then, who are not taking a supporting role, to be out of that. Maybe go up to F4 if you want a little bit more distance. But the other thing to remember is as well, the distance from your sport. So great having F4 or F6 or F8 or something like that. But when you get out to photographing something that's, you know, 50 or 60 yards away, F2.8 versus F8, you're not going to see a huge amount of difference in that anyway, really, because F2 just gets, the effect of depth gets less and less and less the further and further away you get from it. I would always go to F2.8, and I would always shoot at my lowest ISO, and I'd probably always shoot on aperture priority, or probably I would shoot on manual, unless you've got real problems with, like, the sun coming in and going out regularly, so your exposure varies wildly. I'd probably just stick to manual. Find an aperture that works and just stick to it. And then, again, always shoot in RAW so you can correct in post if you had to with poor exposure. Useful tip about sharpening for the web, Ewan. Thanks very much. Yeah, no, you're supposed to sharpen more because it goes on the web, but the problem you've got is that people compress too hard now for the web, because they want the size gone out of the, you know, it's not like 1995 where you could have an image that took 2 minutes to load. People want it instantly now, so they do very heavily compress the items as well. There we go. If you've got a question, then send it to britishjetnetwork@gmail.com, and I will read it out on the next photo show. When the next photo show is, I don't know, but I will try and do it soon, I promise. Next Friday, if I can get into it and get the document. That said, as well, one of the problems I get is finding news, and I have to trawl around for it, and that takes ages. If you've got a story that you'd like me to cover, then send me the story, and I can stick it in the doc, and that saves me a load of work. And the more stories that come in to use, the more chance you've got of a photo show happening, because I'll have more time to sit and process it all and stick it in the doc and do the research. Finding the news is what used to take the time, so please do that. Please check out TSO Host. They're the people that support us and keep us allow us to do this stuff. And write in. send me your comments and give us some reviews, because we've got hardly any reviews in iTunes now. And the fact that we're back, it'd be great if everyone can get onto iTunes and write us a new review, boost us up in the charts, and see where we go from here. We'll be back again next week, I hope. Have a great weekend and really enjoy yourself. Get your cameras out and go and see what you can. Yeah, whereas in, but if you're in England, it's going to be pissing down. So, sorry. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.